And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone. The legendary investor Warren Buffett is reputed to have said, "Money is not everything, but make sure you earn a lot before speaking such nonsense." Well, make of that what you will. But the economic and commercial condition of a country, a society, has a great bearing on the success, health, and welfare of its people. Now, the Swiss, arguably more than most countries in Europe, know this better than others. It was not always a rich country, but for decades it has ranked high, very high, in the list of highest per capita income countries worldwide. And nowadays, it has a population of about 8 million people, with an average elevation across its relatively small country of about 1,400 meters, about 4,000 feet. It's an alpine country with no natural mineral resources to exploit except water, which flows down its mountains, and the industriousness and the ingenuity of its people. And yet, Switzerland has a disproportionately high number of significant international companies, though the backbone of its economy, what are called in French the PMEs, or the Petit Moyen Entreprise, or Mittelstand in German, or small and medium-sized companies. What better person to tell me more, and you too, dear listeners, about this successful country and the challenges that it faces to remain prosperous and successful than the president of Switzerland, of Switzerland's premier business organization, the voice of the Swiss business community, Christoph Maeder of Economy Suisse. Welcome to the McKay Interview, Christoph. It's good to have you here.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
We're sitting together in the friendly Warwick Geneva Hotel straight after a successful British-Swiss Chamber of Commerce lunch where you were guest of honour. It would be unfair on our listeners who were not there to listen to you if we continued the line of questions put to you by your well-informed audience. So let me go back a little and begin by asking you this question. Christoph, there are many people listening to us today who will not be familiar with your organisation because they've recently come from abroad or they work for the United Nations in Geneva or an international organization or are in the non-profit sector. So please tell me in short, what is Economy Suisse and what is it for?
Economy Suisse is the oldest, what we call umbrella organization of Swiss economy. It is an association composed primarily of associations. More than 100 different industries are member associations of Economy Suisse. It represents about 2 million jobs in Switzerland at the end of the day, and it comprises all the big companies as well in all sorts of industries across the country.
So a company can join as an individual member, but it's the association that usually join.
The associations are our members as a matter of principle. We have a few exceptions where companies are direct members. Either they are so big that they traditionally used to be direct members, or they do not have an industry association themselves.
I see, I understand. And what is your assessment of the general state of health of Switzerland's economy today?
If I compare it with other economies, I would say Switzerland's economy is in very good shape in general, which is not to say that it does not, of course, suffer from the impacts which we presently see, unfortunately, in an almost cumulative way. You know, we have the war situation in Ukraine. We have very significant global supply chain problems, which we are faced with. We are still suffering from some consequences of the two-year pandemic situation, which was all over the world, heavily impacting industry, economy. And so, taking all these together, it is a rather difficult mix for economy these days. Switzerland is not short of challenges, therefore, as well. But on average, I think it's fair to say Swiss companies are traditionally very strong, very resilient. They have shown their resilience in several crises, and this is still the case. So in general, I'm optimistic, but of course we are faced with very significant challenges as well.
And when you look at Switzerland's economy by language region, what are the biggest differences, if there are any at all? Or when comparing town versus country, would your assessment be any different? On the health, regarding the health of the economy?
Not as a matter of principle. I think there is quite a bit of an equilibrium between the different regions in Switzerland, particularly between the French and French-speaking and the German-speaking part of Switzerland. They are both well-equipped. They have some focus areas which are maybe a bit particular on a micro scale almost, but in general, I think the situation is somewhat
it's
similar.
Fairly similar. Okay.
Fairly distributed.
Okay. I'm just curious to know that. Because when one thinks, say, of a place like the Graubünden, and it's essentially, it seems to be farming and tourism, or tourism and farming.
We have a couple of cantons which are, of course, more rural or are more, since they are in the Alpine part of Switzerland, are more engaged in touristic businesses, of course, and less so in terms of industrialized workforce or in financial services. That's clear. But what we call the Mittelland, almost the part in the middle of Switzerland, the flatter part of Switzerland.
Argau,
Zurich, Bern, exactly. And so on. Yeah. I think it's pretty evenly distributed. We have a couple of heavy focus areas, such as the pharmaceutical industry, which is heavily centering around Basel. We have a very, very well emerging and very well developing high tech area in the Lake Geneva space, so the Arc-Lemanique, which prospers very well for quite some time now. So yes, there are focus points, there are focus regions, but overall the distribution is pretty nice across the whole country.
Okay, we're going to examine that a bit more deeply later on in our conversation. But when I spoke to your predecessor, Heinz Karrer, it was in the spring of 2016, the Swiss franc had just been unpegged from the euro. Now, for different reasons, the Swiss franc is growing in strength again. My question is, because I'm a novice in this area, Christoph, is that a recurrence of the problem of a successful safe haven currency, or are there deeper issues to be addressed?
I think it is primarily around this syndrome of safe haven currency, which the Swiss franc has been for a very long period of time. Whenever there are in world economy where there are big problems, Swiss franc turns out to be a currency to be in these difficult days, and that's kind of what we have to live with. We are used to that, although it makes, of course, life more tricky, since Switzerland is heavily export-oriented. Our customers would need to pay us our high prices in their own currency, and if the exchange rate is not favorable for foreign currencies, of course, the prices for our customers go up, which is demanding for Swiss exporters. Now, what at the moment where we have high inflation almost all over the world, what you also can see is the inflation rates in Switzerland are significantly lower than in the neighbor countries or in the United States, which helps us a bit to mitigate the effect of a strong Swiss franc versus other currencies. But let's see how it's going to continue to develop.
My next question came up in the lunch, in the Q&A. Isn't Switzerland becoming just too expensive for its own good and for the good of its ordinary citizens, let alone the companies they work for? What do your Economy Suisse members say to you about price rises and the cost of living?
The rise of the cost of living is, I think, for the enterprises, particularly concerning within one sector, which is the cost of living, the housing cost. Yeah. The housing cost is
rental and purchase.
Rental and purchase. Yeah. It's more and more a problem for employees, particularly employees at a lower salary rank, to be able to afford living space in a decent commuting distance to their jobs. That is, of course, particularly true if their jobs are in an urban environment. You know, let's take an example. Living in Zurich has become extremely expensive, and so you need to commute from quite far distance to Zurich so that you can afford a decent house, a decent apartment. That has become a more urgent problem than before. And since prices have been rising also in rural areas quite significantly, it's not just limited to cities. So the cost of housing is maybe the one thing which stands out. The other elements of cost of living, yes, they are high as well in Switzerland, but on the other hand, we have a very high level of salaries here in this country, which kind of mitigates the effect quite significantly.
Just to run on from that question, Christoph, you must have members who are in the construction industry. Is Switzerland building lots of accommodation of different sizes and affordability? Or is, I mean, I know in Geneva there's a big debate always about building, where to build, what to build. What's your general sense of the country?
There has been an incredible construction industry boom over the last 15 to 20 years. I mean, there have been numbers of projects pursued in an unprecedented way to the times before. It has come to a bit of a slowdown very recently, but the last 20 years, you know, have been characterized by a huge construction work, huge construction industry boom. There have been built a lot of apartments have been built. However, the population has grown accordingly.
8 million, more than 8 million
We have
people.
More than 8 million population now in Switzerland. There has been a quite significant immigration over the last decades. And so there was a need for those apartments. And the space used per capita has gone up as well. So we have much more households with one or two persons.
Yeah, because divorce
these days,
and people living separately.
All sorts of life models which are coming through. So that the request for more space has been driven, yes, by increasing population, but also by a higher use of space.
I see. A question that, again, follows on from this discussion, and it's something which fascinates me, is labour and skill levels in a small country. How is Switzerland doing? I mean, is it able to get the numbers of foreign workers it needs at different levels of the skills hierarchy? And please explain the complexity of that issue, because I know it's not, everybody has a simple solution, but it's not that simple.
No, it's not. Indeed, it's not. First of all, let me say, I think we are still somewhat in a comfortable situation since we have a fabulous, what I think is fabulous, professional education system. Our dual, as we call it, the dual education system with vocational training, very, very common in this country for qualified people, then is extremely helpful for the demands of Swiss economy for high quality workers, employees, experts at all levels. So the system produces, if I may say so, a high number of highly qualified people at all levels, not just at academic levels, but at all levels of the system. So that's a good condition to start from. However, since Switzerland's economy has been so successful, it has expanded its number of jobs quite significantly, and the demand for qualified people has gone up on and on. And so we are at present in a situation where we are not in a position to fulfill all these needs which the economy has by domestic supply, if I may say so, i.e. we are dependent upon immigration, of course, particularly when it comes to high qualified people, where just the number of opportunities in Switzerland outperforms the size of the population.
And for those of us listening who don't know the detail, in this country of three tiers, federal, cantonal, commune, Gemeinde, how are decisions made on permits? Just give us some sense of that complexity, because I think people would be interested to hear that.
It is a very complex system. First of all, overall immigration for citizens from the European Union based on our bilateral agreements is not limited, i.e. if as a EU citizen you want to work in Switzerland, you have a chance to come here and search for a job, and you can stay once you have a job in this country. So there is a free immigration, circulation of people between Switzerland and the European Union. That's the first layer. So that makes it easier or has made it easier since that's in place. Then there is a limited number of immigration which is tolerated by the Federation on an overall scale from countries outside of the European Union. And then, of course, it's the task of the federal, together with the cantonal authorities, to break that down into numbers per canton, but also numbers per country of origin. You know, how many people are we allowing to come in from an Asian country versus United States versus Australia, and so on. So this is a quite tricky puzzle that you have
to put together.
Plus, you have then a request on the local markets. Let's take Basel as an example, with a very significant pharmaceutical industry. Industry has a high demand for highly qualified researchers from all over the world. They need to recruit really globally. And so maybe the pre-agreed number of immigration from a given region is not sufficient for the needs in a given year, in a given canton. And then you need to try to adapt. And there is some flexibility requested for the authorities. But quite frankly, that works reasonably well so far. So there is some trade-offs to be made between cantons, between community, but on average that works pretty well.
Okay. My guest today is Christoph Maeder, president of Economy Suisse, the leading voice of business here in Switzerland. Christoph, the nature of the business map of Switzerland changes. Apart from the traditional mainstays like banking, finance, chemicals, pharmaceuticals, watchmaking, Switzerland also now has significant commodity trading companies. I mean, in Geneva, has many oil trading companies. I think 20-30% of the world's oil is traded in this relatively small city. Zug has developed, so I understand, an important cryptocurrency presence. And I used to live there, but this has happened since I left the canton. Tell me more about how Switzerland is shaping up in its handling of innovation, of startups and new business sectors successfully. There must be great competition from other countries to have these successful businesses elsewhere. Tell me a bit more about that.
Indeed, there is big competition on a global scale for these sorts of investments, these sort of developments, no doubt about it. Switzerland has, I think, a lot to offer to be a place for innovation, a place for new ventures, for startups, and so on. One element for sure is we have an excellent education system and an excellent technology environment here. Innovation technology is high up on the agenda of many, many traditional industries as well. So as a matter of fact, there are a lot of offspring ventures which are being created, startups, venture capital companies who are basically profiting from a history of technology and innovation, which is now just being done through different channels, be it a startup, be it a venture capital enterprise. And there is plenty of money available in principle.
Because of the capital markets in this country.
Capital markets, private wealth is high, so that more and more there are private investors, there are institutional investors who are ready to invest their money into new adventures and into new younger companies. And the venture capital industry, the private equity industry has grown rapidly in this country over the last couple of years. And I think another important aspect is we are an attractive place for a lot of people from all over the world. So people like to live here. Yeah. And so even those smaller setups, they can attract good people from all over the world. And so the mix of all that taken together makes it, over the last, I would say, 10 years, a much more vibrant environment in that respect than it has been before. So it is a bit of a revolution for Switzerland, I would say, in as much as this is leaving the old traditional paths of traditional industry activity. But more and more you see that with the younger generation. One very important factor in that has been we have two really world-class technology and engineering high schools with the ETH in Zurich and the EBFL in Lausanne. We have lots of creation of new companies out of teams from those two universities. and they have kind of almost created their own environment of founders, of innovators, of entrepreneurs. And this you know, one success case attracts the next. There has been the build-up of a real community of technology.
And are we able to keep them in this country when they grow, or do they go to America? Do they go to California? Is that just the way things are because of the scale of the American economy?
You see both, but we need to be very careful in order to be able to keep them. And then, of course, when it comes to the seeding phase basically is behind you, when it comes to growing the business, attracting new investors, attracting new people, all other factors are coming into play than just having a handful of innovative, good initial entrepreneurs. And so we need to be careful that our framework conditions to work in Switzerland, to pay taxes in Switzerland, to have access to the right sort of services, that these framework conditions stay attractive. Mm. And there is more to be done, but so far, I would say it's working reasonably well.
Okay, my next question won't surprise you. It's about the basic politics and economics. There's a political impasse between Switzerland and the European Union. Tell me what the implications are for the local. When I say local, I mean the national, not local, the national economy, in terms of worst case, best case, and as we seem now to be stuck in the middle somewhere case scenario. Yeah. How can this important relationship be made mutually successful, Christoph?
First of all, I think, as you say, this is a case of mutual advantages, which we should promote. There is absolutely no economic reason why Switzerland and the European Union shouldn't have a very close relationship with each other and should continue with what has been a very successful relationship through the bilateral agreements in the recent past. So that's the first thing. I think there is all good incentives on both sides, to continue. Now, as you say, there is a bit of an impasse. Discussions have become very difficult, by the decision of the federal government to terminate the negotiations for a horizontal framework agreement, have become even more difficult, and our people from the government are now trying to reopen a platform of discussion.
So there's no contact at the top level for the moment?
For the moment, there is exploration talks between diplomats, state secretaries, delegates from the Commission, and delegates from our government. That's what's going on. But for the time being, there is no very significant visible progress of these discussions. What is the best case? The best case is that they find soon a way so that we can continue with the bilateral agreements between the European Union and Switzerland as we were used to, and that we can even add new bilateral agreements. For example, we would need relatively urgent the agreement on participation of Switzerland with the big research program Horizon Europe. We would need an agreement on electricity, hopefully very soon, in order to stabilize also.
Because there's a clock ticking. When you say soon, there's a clock ticking in all of this.
For Horizon, there is a clock ticking, whether Switzerland can still participate in the 3 or 4 year phase which is now going on. The clock comes to an end roughly in October this year, so until then we should have a solution for it. So the best case is we find a general solution which allows the further maintenance and the further expansion of the bilateral system. The worst case is we found for the foreseeable future no solution. And then it is clear the value of the bilateral agreement will erode over time. Switzerland will no longer have, Swiss economy will no longer have the easy access to the European free market as we were used to in the past. And what that means then is that investment decisions by Swiss and foreign companies will in tendency more and more be taken in favor of non-Swiss investments, i.e. investments in the European Union, investments somewhere else. And so Switzerland will lose a big portion of its competitive advantage over time. It's not going to happen as a shock overnight.
It's a gradual process.
It's a gradual erosion of the benefits. And I think we should do whatever is possible and politically feasible to avoid such a situation.
This is the war in Ukraine. Christoph, and it's a difficult topic to discuss, but the war in Ukraine has forced many countries to examine the word dependency much more carefully. I guess that Switzerland does not depend on Russia for oil and gas, but how does it balance the strength of, let's say, China, producing as it does so many important products at attractive prices for both industry and consumers? There must be an ongoing tension there in the search for an acceptable balance between states.
I think you are referring exactly to the right term, the acceptable balance. And this is what, in the context of this Ukrainian war, but also in the context of China, is now being discussed with a high degree of urgency. I don't think that neither Switzerland nor the world economy are going to turn back on a status where countries were basically independent from each other. Globalization will not be reversed per se. That's pretty clear.
There have been a lot of negative words about globalization.
I know, but let's be realistic. If you wanted to nationalize the international supply chain connections in the world economy, this would be a gigantic misallocation of resources. I mean, there were thoughts in the pandemic discussion around we need a national pharmaceutical independence. I mean, this is totally unrealistic to think in these categories, and we are not going to turn that back to an independent situation. So globalization will be a reality, global supply chain will be a reality, and a certain level of dependency on these global supply chains will stay with us. It is about the balance. You know, companies are rethinking their own supply chain in terms of dual sources, in terms of avoiding situations where they depend on one single supplier in a key area. That's all fair enough, and I think that's good management practice to do that. And the recent crises have brought that much more to the awareness of people, and I think this is good in general terms. We need to be careful. We need to balance the dependency properly.
Last question, Christoph, before we close. Let's look to the future. It's a question about young people. What are your thoughts on the prospects for young people in Switzerland and the creation of good jobs for the working population of the next generation? We touched on this, and you talked about education and the two-tier system here, or the two systems. Though there's no doubt that Switzerland is an innovative country, do these new businesses stay here and form the basis of new shoots of growth in what is, after all, a successful, though mature, economy?
I think the good news is we have it all in our hands to answer your question with a clear yes. There is a bright future for young people if we get our act properly together, and I mean our political act in particular, and the maintenance and creation of good framework conditions for industry to flourish and to invest. We have it in our hands to do that. The country has an excellent starting position, good education, a high degree of innovation and technology, availability of world-class services in all aspects, a good quality of life here, excellent international connections. So it is in our hands to maintain that, to take care of this, to continue, and we can do it. So I'm an optimist by all means, and if we do not make dramatic political mistakes, this country is going to be successful for the foreseeable future.
Great, great answer. Christoph, thanks so much for answering my questions with such clarity and optimism. My guest today has been Christoph Maeder, President of Economie Suisse, Switzerland's premier business organization. Thanks again, Christoph.
Thank you very much.
That was the McKay Interview with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.